your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Reiki Master and host Phyllis Lei Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
This is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Welcome to the show today. In this series of stories of masters, I have had the pleasure of meeting up with Bobby Free, who is now living in New Zealand. And when I was talking to her over lunch, I realized that I would love to interview her. So we have a little voice and energy from the Reiki community in New Zealand. So, Bobby, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis.
What we start out with, Bobby, in these interviews is just to tell your story of how you came to Reiki. And yes, because those are always very interesting stories and wonderful ways for students to relate to the path of Reiki for people.
Yeah, well, way back in the late 1970s, probably 78 and 79, I began to feel the need to be touching people and helping, and I had this idea that I needed to do healing. And then I started seeking, how do I go about this? And at that time, I thought all the healing came through churches. So I visited all sorts of different healers in different congregations and went to their services and watched what they did, talked to some of them, and it just didn't touch me at all. I even worked with the charismatics in the Catholic Church for quite a while, and I didn't feel happy with that. And I had a friend who said to me, she said, I went to this show, and there are all sorts of brochures about different healers, and she said, I found this, and I thought you might like to read it. And it was a brochure of Virginia Sandel about Reiki. She was telling, it was just a little brochure thing about Reiki and the story of Reiki and that she was going to be teaching classes. And that absolutely spoke to me. It just hit me right in the solar plexus. And I said, oh my God, this is what I'm looking for. And then I sat down with it and I put it away in my drawer for a week and I didn't look at it. And I took it out a week later and I still had the same feeling that I had to do this. And Virginia's class was up in, I was in Wilmington, Delaware, and her class was way up in Pennsylvania somewhere. So I went to this weekend class and I drove for 3 hours, and it was the first time in my life I had ever gone anywhere by myself in a car.
Really?
That far. Yeah, I was very dependent on doing things with my husband, and I'd drive around my city, but I never actually travelled anywhere by myself.
Wow,
so
amazing.
It was a huge thing for me, and my family sort of didn't know what was going on. They thought I'd gone a little bit weird. Anyhow, off I went to Virginia Sandel's first degree class, and it was absolutely amazing. So anyhow, I came back to back home to Wilmington, and I had to practice this Reiki, and I didn't know any other Reiki people in the community at all. I was completely alone. So I had five kids, and I would practice on them. And it was during the summer, and they thought, oh, Mum's gone absolutely crazy. I'd say, come on, lie down, let me practice on you, you know. And after I'd done Reiki on them, they would realize that they felt good. And so they started bringing their friends in during the summer holidays. Come on, my mum will fix it, whether it was a sore foot or a sore ankle or a twisted wrist or a headache. Well, my mum will fix it, come on. So I had all these kids coming in for bits of Reiki. It was just spot on Reiki, you know, and then they'd be off again. And then they all went back to school, and I was still playing with my Reiki. And I started getting phone calls from parents of these children saying, oh, Mrs. Free, I hear that you do some healing thing, and I'd like to come and see you. So that's how my clinic started. And even before I did second degree, I had people coming and wanting Reiki. So I did the best I could with my first degree, and they went away happy.
That is a fabulous story.
Yeah,
really,
so
fabulous.
My children Wonderful. Were my ambassadors. They really were. It was quite amazing. So then I was, after about 3 or 4 months, I was still completely alone, and I had no Reiki contact, and I was feeling very sort of, what do I do? You know, it has to be somebody else out there. And I had a client come to me, it was at least 6 months after I'd done first degree, and he said, do you know so-and-so? And I said, no. He said, well, there's a guy in town that does Reiki. I said, really? Somebody else does Reiki? And he said, yeah. So I got his name. And it turned out that he and his wife were doing Reiki, and they had a little group going. So I found them, like, through a client, and I started going to they used to do group meetings, you know, uh-huh. just sort of group Reiki. So I started going to them. And then after another month or so, they were first degree, uh-huh. all these people were first degree. And one of them had contact with Patricia Ewing, and I have no idea how that happened, but they heard that Patricia Ewing was coming to town and she was going to do a second degree. So I just said, yes, you know, we just sort of flocked there. And I'm really not sure how long I'd been doing first before. It was a few months. So I did my second degree. And after that, everything just exploded, and I was really busy. And I sometimes had 14 people a week coming to the house, and I set up a little room in our house. And the family were by this time, very cooperative and understanding, and that's how I came to Reiki.
So, wow, that's an amazing story. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And what was Virginia Samdahl's class like when you first took it? I mean, this was in
1980.
Mm. Wow. So this was the year that Hawaii Tapata died.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's amazing because teaching Reiki back then was so different than it is now. It was like we were all teaching, and even though sometimes our practice seemed a little bit different, it just felt like we were all doing the same thing. And it was a very wonderful feeling that we, like, you could go to Patricia Ewing's second degree class and know that what you were being taught came from the same place.
Same source.
And that was very interesting. I think today there's an interesting process that went on, of course, and then after I got over being defensive and upset about the system being changed and so on, I realized that everybody needed to have a different path to Reiki, so to speak. And though sometimes I didn't like it, it was something that really I saw was really natural and really human. And then eventually what I've realized is that this happens to everything, and everything that we human beings get into, somehow we have to explore and create and make it our own. So the climate today in Reiki is very different than it was back then.
Yeah, and in those days we were encouraged to have different masters for the different degrees so that you would get more experience.
Right.
Not a different type of teaching, but just an experience from other people to sort of pick up more.
Uh-huh.
Human stuff, really.
Yeah. Well, all of us also had our different styles. Very different styles. So, Virginia was one of Hawaii Otakata's very first masters. I think she was initiated in 1975.
She spoke about Takata and excuse me, she really loved Takata. I could tell how close she was to her. But the thing that shocked me about Virginia was that I walked into class and everybody was smoking. And in those days, of course, people did smoke.
Yeah, everybody smoked.
And they smoked in their homes, and this class was in a house. And here was this group of women in a kitchen out the back, all sitting around smoking. And I, at that point, I didn't know who the Reiki master was, and it turned out that it was Virginia, and she had a cigarette as well. And I was shocked, because for some reason I thought that all Reiki masters should be absolutely pure and not smoke and not drink and not, you know, all this.
Not eat meat and so on and so on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But she was wonderful. I really love Virginia. She's very, very strict, very precise in her class. She certainly gave me an incredible grounding. There's no doubt about it.
Great. And do you have a little story or something that comes to mind, a little piece in the class that just still is with you after all these years? Almost 30 years.
Yeah. Well, I can remember how she initiated everybody by putting us, there were probably about 20 people in this class. And she had two rows of chairs back to back. And we all sat on these chairs, two rows, with the chairs back to back.
Oh, two rows of ten.
Ten, yeah.
Oh, I didn't ever get that.
Yeah, two rows of ten back to back. So she was able to walk in between them and around the front of these two rows. So we all just sat there with our eyes closed while she did this.
And were your arms up also?
Not all the time, no. We were just with our hands on our hearts and our eyes closed. And then when she came to us, she said, "I'll tap you on the shoulder and you put your hands up." So she'd shown us what we had to do. So you'd get this little tap on the shoulder and up would go the hands. and she would initiate you. Completely, do the whole thing. And you'd sit there. It was a good half hour, I guess, by the time we'd finished. But you could feel the energy in the room. And afterwards, I can remember some of the people saying, "You know, we're not allowed to look and we can't see what she's doing." And there were a couple of people in that row that were peeking. But I had a feeling that they weren't really sincere enough about the whole thing, you know.
That's an interesting idea.
She had told us to close our eyes, and as far as I was concerned, that's what you'd better do, you know.
Right, exactly.
But I really can't remember any particular thing that she talked about that I remember. But I have a deep feeling that I was so, at that point I was so, she gave me, I don't know, I felt so grounded and close to source. It was it was quite an amazing experience.
Wonderful. It's time for our first station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence, and we'll be back with Bobby Free from New Zealand in just a moment.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore? Or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food, it's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
the new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Bobby Free from New Zealand. Bobby, I'm sorry, I'm so desperately ignorant about the geography of New Zealand. Where are you from?
I'm from Auckland, actually North Auckland, a little place called Lee, and it's a fishing village.
I assume it's on the ocean.
It's on the ocean. Right on the ocean.
Wonderful. Mm. Well, I have to say that one of the only things that I know about New Zealand are the movies that come out of New Zealand these days.
There are quite a few of them.
Quite a few of them, and one of my most favorite ones is The Whale Rider.
Yes, that was wonderful.
Wonderful movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know how accurately it depicted the Maori way of living in these days, but it was really beautiful.
I think it was reasonably authentic.
Yeah, it really was.
Yes.
Wonderful. Mm. Well, that's a really fascinating and very inspiring movie for those of you who are movie buffs. Yeah. Try finding The Whale Rider. Well, Bobby, one of the things that happened for me when I was listening to your story is that I didn't realize, and I've known Bobby for many, many, many years, and I didn't realize that you had been on the search. So I'm wondering, where does the search come from?
Well, like I mentioned, my children were my ambassadors once I'd become Reiki. They brought me to my search also because one of my children had a boyfriend. And it was his 18th birthday, I think. It was a special birthday. And this boy lived next door to us. And his father, who lived in Washington, came to him to his birthday. And we were all at the birthday party in the backyard. And this person was sitting at it was a big barbecue type birthday. And this, I was there because of my kids and this boy, you see. And his father arrived. He wasn't living with them for his special birthday. And we were sitting at a picnic table, just chatting, and this man was sitting opposite me, you see. And people were sort of moving around. And at some point, just he and I was left at the table, and others had moved off and were doing other things. And he was chanting, and his name was, they called him Al. And I looked at him, and I said to him, "I can't call you Al." And I thought, where the heck did that come from? I mean, it was shocking to me. I mean, here was I, this little housewife, you know, who sort of didn't speak out of turn or anything. I said, "I can't call you Al." He said, "Try Kabir." And I was hit with a light that you would not believe. It was just came over me. And I likened it later to the story I've heard of St. Paul, who was thrown from his horse by the light.
Right.
That's really what it was. Just absolutely amazing, and I just sort of was stunned, completely stunned, and then I can't remember what happened for the next half hour or so, and people were all around and this talking went on, you know, and then when we were saying goodbye, we're just saying goodbye to people and that sort of thing. And I said goodbye to him. And then I said to him, "I just want you to hold me. I wanted to be completely embraced in this energy." And he said, "Okay." And he stepped towards me. And I said, no. You know, because I was embarrassed that if he hugged me when I'd only just first met him, some of the family may not approve of mother being hugged by a strange guy. So.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, it turned out that after that, I started getting hot hands. I was getting all these hot flushes, and I knew it wasn't the menopause because I'd sort of almost been through that. But my hands were burning, and I'd be putting them on cold things, like on cold windows and chairs with metal legs. And I was in a bus once and had my hands on the window. It was awful. I was just burning up. So I called this guy in Washington, and I said, I don't know what's happened, but I said, and I told him my problem, and he said, you need to heal. I said, how do I do that? He said, you'll just have to find your own way. He said, I cannot tell you how you can do that. You'll have to find out. So that was the beginning of my search for healing.
That's amazing.
And he has been my friend. He still is my friend for years. All this time through, he's been sort of a mentor, just on the periphery, guiding me and making sure that I didn't go over the edge and pulling me back. And making sure that my marriage stayed together when the family, my husband sort of was beginning to think that maybe I had really gone off the rocker. That sort of thing. It's been an amazing... and he actually, I initiated him into Reiki after several, you know, after long years. He said, I'd like you to give me Reiki. And I initiated him to first and second degree. And it's been amazing. So he has been a part of my spiritual life, and in a way, it was an awakening of some sort.
That's amazing. And I just wonder, where did this name Kabir come from, and what is his connection?
He is an American, and he married an Indian. He married the ambassador. The Indian ambassador to New York's daughter.
Uh-huh.
That's the connection. So they went back to India to live for many years. And they both ended up in ashrams. She went to the mother's ashram, and he went to... I can't remember the name. It doesn't matter. But he spent many months in an ashram. And then his children had come back to America to live with their aunt because the family had broken up.
Uh-huh.
As a result of this, of their spiritual paths, the parents. And so from the ashram that he was in, he was with Rajneesh. And Rajneesh had so much energy. It was just spread everywhere. Even though Rajneesh was looked upon as a terrible person later with all his limousines and things, I don't know whether you've had these stories, but anyhow, that doesn't matter. He came back to America to be with his children, and he brought with him from the ashram this incredible energy that he was carrying, and Rajneesh had given him the name Kabir. And Kabir is an old poet, ancient poet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's where he got the name from. It was given to him by Rajneesh.
Uh-huh.
And with that name, I believe, came all this light and energy.
Wow.
Which he carried after and he then had to start searching his own path, because he came back to the States and he was just lost.
And yes.
he didn't know what
yes.
to do with it.
Yes.
So he had his own problems. And I sort of pulled into that by his energy, which started mm-hmm. me on my path.
Well, isn't that an amazing story?
It is. When I think about it and talk about it, I you know, you forget these things in your own life. And then you say, wow, that happened to me. And that's why I'm here right at this moment talking to you.
Yeah, what an amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's time for another station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be right back with Bobby Free.
Awakened media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Reiki treatments can be done almost anywhere, on the floor, on a bed, or even on the dining room table. But I certainly prefer giving and receiving treatments on my comfortable, lightweight Astrolite massage table. Contact us for more information at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Marissa, are you ready yet? I know you can hear me. You are not missing school again. Marissa! You trying to be a nobody or something? Let's go! All right then. Hit it. I know you can hear this. Hey guys, move closer. That's it. Girl, I am not leaving.
Hey, whatever it takes, don't let your friends drop out. A real friend can make all the difference.
Cut that noise, yo! I'm coming!
Took you long enough. Thanks for the help, guys.
For more ways to help, go to OperationGraduation.com. A public service message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Bobby Free from around Auckland, New Zealand. But Bobby, before you moved back to New Zealand, you lived in the States, and then from the States you were called to New Zealand to teach? Is that how that happened? Or how did Reiki start in New Zealand? Maybe that's a good question.
Yeah. Well, after I had become a Reiki master with Phyllis, I felt very strongly that I needed to take Reiki back to New Zealand. It was sort of a thing that came to me very deeply. It was, and I've got a feeling that when I was actually initiated by you saying Reiki has to go back to New Zealand, and I didn't know anything about what was going on there. I just knew that there was no Reiki in New Zealand. Now, it turned out that after I had been initiated, in, I think it was the November, and my husband and I were going to go back for a holiday that January, the next January, and I got a phone call from New Zealand, from a Reiki student of Marta Getty, and he told me that Marta had been to New Zealand that year. And she had taught one class in Auckland, a first degree class.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were all desperate to learn second degree. And Marta could not, for some reason, she could not go back.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked if I, he had heard that my name had been put on the Reiki Master list on the Alliance.
Uh-huh.
And Marta gave him my name, I guess. So he called me from New Zealand in the States and asked if I would come and teach. So I said, well, I happen to be coming in 2 months. And he said, that would be great. They'd set up classes. I said, fine. I hadn't taught. Phyllis had only just initiated me as a master. And so this was the rebirthing group who had actually brought Marta out to New Zealand to do that first class. And this person set up classes for me in Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch. And all these rebirthing people wanted to do Reiki. So I did a first and second degree in Auckland onto Marta's first degree people. I did one second degree class. And then I did another first degree class. In Wellington I did a first degree class. And in Christchurch I did a first degree class. And those were the first classes I ever taught. And I taught them in New Zealand. I couldn't believe
what was that?
Happened.
What was that like? And we must have felt really very alone.
I was. It was absolutely bizarre. And I was absolutely convinced that Yusui was going to teach for me.
Uh-huh.
I knew that I would. I had all the right notes, and I had all the right teachings, and I had all the everything was lined up for me. But I was incredibly nervous, and I'm not. I wasn't a person who would teach. That had never been my role. You know, I just raised a family.
Mm-hmm.
And but I knew exactly what I was going to say because I was so passionate about Reiki. And the first thing I did every time was tell the Reiki story in the first class. Uh-huh. The first thing I did was tell the Reiki story from Yasuri through to Carter.
Uh-huh.
And my own initiating master, Phyllis. And so that sort of brought me back to center and alignment,
uh-huh.
just telling that story.
Uh-huh.
And it set me up. And from there, the class just flowed. And if ever I got stuck, I would just say, Yasui, called, you know, I always called on his name. And the words came out of my mouth, and I'd say, where did that come from? You know,
exactly.
It was amazing. So I did these classes, and I came back to the States, and I didn't go back to live in New Zealand until 1986. And in those years, I went to New Zealand every year and did more classes and checked on my students and kept in touch with them.
Uh-huh.
So that's uh-huh. how Reiki started in New Zealand, but it was really Marta that bought the first class.
Uh-huh.
But I went and then I became the first resident master.
Uh-huh.
Because I went and lived there, and I was the only master living in New Zealand, so I was really busy.
And then you said that at some point the world discovered New Zealand.
That's correct.
And it wasn't just the quote New Agers or people that were doing other things. It was like the world discovered New Zealand for movie sets and for lots of different other
everything.
Things. Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
tourism
became the destination resort. Mm. Somehow the last frontier.
That's quite true. So it became the last frontier for traveling Reiki masters.
Also.
Yes, who were inclined to sort of go around the world teaching.
Uh-huh.
And several of them, I had masters calling me from all over the place asking if I could set up classes for them in New Zealand. And I was a little bit upset by this. I thought, goodness, I'm struggling to do my own classes. I said, you can come, but I'm not going to arrange your classes. You know, I don't mind if you come and teach in New Zealand. It's not my territory completely. And I was into not having any territories or a master saying, that's mine, you can't work in this area.
Right.
But we did. We had a lot of Reiki masters coming, and Reiki started booming in New Zealand. But I kept... My group of students were smaller than the people who did bigger classes and came in and rushed through, and they never came back. They sort of, a lot of students felt abandoned with this, and so over the years we have developed group Reiki, especially with the Reiki masters. I actually, having been to the Alliance Master gatherings in, mm-hmm. in America, I felt very strongly that the few Reiki masters that we had in New Zealand who were serious about Reiki and staying in New Zealand, that they needed support, and that we needed to have meetings with our peers as with our master.
Uh-huh.
As you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the first meeting of group meeting of masters in my house. I can't remember what year it was now, and there were five of us, and we spent a weekend together, and it was absolutely amazing. We all just loved it. And then the following year we did it again, and we had eight masters, and we went up to Kaitaia, right up north, and did that in a home of one of the masters. And then the third year, we had 12 people. And we went to Tahara, which was a retreat center in Taupo, in the center of the North Island. And after that, every year, the Reiki masters met at Tahara. It became the place for their retreat.
Oh, I see.
And it went up to the following year, it was... 18, and then went up to 22, and it hasn't ever gone over 30. It's sort of balanced out at about 30 for the up to this point. But every year, I think they're up to about their 10th or 11th. Maybe it's about the 10th Reiki Masters gathering coming up next week, actually, when I go back to New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
we'll be having their gathering.
And this is a group that has different forms of Reiki and different practices.
Yes,
and
we ask all masters to come, and we recognize each other as masters of Reiki. And even if we don't agree with how we teach or what we do, we just love being in each other's energy. We discuss the things we do, the way we work, and we acknowledge each other, but we may not necessarily approve, but there's a friendliness about it all. We say, okay, that's the way you do it. I'm not going there. I do it this way, but we're still masters and supporting each other.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. it's something that's ideal, and there are countries that have been, or areas of countries that have been very instrumental in promoting this sort of association. But then there's this other part. So New Zealand is so small that it's really wonderful that you all have taken on this mission to be able to meet each other, because I believe that a lot of the using your judgment to separate kind of energy comes when you don't really know them. You know, just being able to sit and know the face and be able to have a cup of tea and talk about your issues when you're as a Reiki master and so on is very important. It allows them to become human and to become, you know, a colleague rather than an enemy, which is really great.
That's true, and we have so many different lineages, as you might say, where they've come from, and we also have several who are involved with the different Japanese Reikis. I don't know their names, but there are three Japanese Reiki groups that are have a different name.
Yes,
Reiki something. I honestly, I've never gotten involved with it. I've always sort of not put energy into finding, even worrying too much about what's going on with that, you know.
And, uh-huh.
But we do, we do have some of the masters who have learnt those systems.
Yes,
as well as the Reiki, the Yasui Reiki, Ryoho. So we all accept each other.
That's wonderful.
And they'll even sort of talk about how they do it or what it's about and that sort of thing. And they're just wonderful people.
Great. Wonderful. And I think that perhaps some listeners would want to know, well, if you have this resource sitting in front of you, so to speak, for this weekend that you meet, why aren't you interested?
Well, I don't allow myself to get involved because I know I'm quite happy and settled. I'm very content. In my part, I've stopped searching. I'm not searching. I know I'm doing the right thing. So getting into being concerned about these other ways of doing Reiki don't really interest me, because I don't want to waste my energy and time on that when I know I've got everything I need. Because I know that what I'm doing, and I feel very close to Source and very close to Yasui, and through through my own lineage and through Takata and Phyllis, that I don't need to get involved in that, because I feel that people get involved in these things and they get fearful and they say, well, am I doing the right thing? Maybe I should be doing this, maybe I should be doing that. And there's a lot of unrest, and I believe it's because they're not absolutely certain of their own path and haven't really come to say the big this is it, and I am full.
Beautiful. Well, that's amazing and a really wonderful story for those who are still on the search. And I had a question come to me about that. And it's interesting, the other Reiki masters have the same feeling?
that I do.
Yeah, the other Reiki masters in this group seem to have the same feeling, that they've come to a place and somehow they don't need to convince each other that theirs is the right way.
Yes, they do. They come in peace. I mean, it's like having a peace pipe.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, because what I realized when you were speaking about it is that it's so easy for human beings to think, well, if it's right for me, then it must be right for everyone.
Yes, yeah.
And this particular assumption really starts a lot of wars, I mean, literally and figuratively. And I think that it's great that somehow your community is able to hold this place of knowing that it's right for you, and whatever practice this other person has is right for them, and the two rights don't need to agree.
It's fantastic. And also, since I went back to New Zealand, there was so much discord going on in Australia and other countries and America about who was right and who was wrong. So I was absolutely determined that New Zealand would not get into that, that we were small enough to keep that away if we really worked at it. And we have, and there's a whole group of masters who just don't want to have discord. They want New Zealand to be people to be able to do whatever lineage of Reiki they feel they need to work in, but they want to be in accord.
Wonderful.
It really is lovely.
Wonderful. Well, what an inspiration for the rest of the world. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, there you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept. Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, the Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the law of attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street. But with free family learning programs, you can get the education you need. Call 1-877-FAMLIT1 for information on free learning programs. 1-877-FAMLIT1.
Check it out. Win your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Reiki practitioners everywhere prefer Astrolite massage tables because of optimum portability, leg clearance, easy setup, comfort, and quality. For 15 years, Rampa Enterprises, previously Magic Flute, has been shipping tables around the world to the global Reiki community.
Why wait any longer to get yours? Contact us now through our website at www.portablemassagetables.com, and we'll help you select just the right table to fit your needs. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Bobby Free from New Zealand, and listening to this wonderful story of peace. It's very inspiring, especially in our world situation today. And I'm wondering if this dedication to meeting on the grounds of seeing that you have a very strong bond that's very similar. You all have this passion for Reiki and an understanding that this is your path, which are two very strong foundation blocks for a meeting. And you seem to have naturally come to that together. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just wondering if this energy or this philosophy comes at all from the indigenous people of New Zealand.
It could well, and I think that the peace philosophy is something that New Zealand has always had since, I don't know, maybe the end of the Maori Wars. They decided that we'd had enough, and that was it. And for example, New Zealand wouldn't allow nuclear warships in, and we stood up against the US, and we still do, you know. But that's sort of behind us now because nobody tries to push us into having nuclear ships come into our ports, you see. So that was a huge thing. And also Greenpeace. We had a Greenpeace ship blown up in our waters. And that was a few years ago now. And so anything like that, the people really get upset about. And New Zealanders on the whole are inclined to be, I can say, peaceful people, but no more peaceful than any other country. But it seems to be the philosophy to remain united.
Uh-huh.
Although, I mean, we fight like cats and dogs over any politics and anything you can think of. There's a lot of dissent between peoples. But as a whole, there's a certain unity.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you know, it could be Maori influence I don't know. But it's,
so do they traditionally have a kind of council or something that they talk over differences, or is this...
Who?
The Maori.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah,
they
I'm just
do.
Wondering,
they
because
do.
In the States, you know, we have had a lot of waves of different teachings from the American Indian tribes, and one of them is sitting in a circle as a council, which a lot of people try to do, and being able to have certain characteristics of that council so that people are honored and respected for themselves, and that there's no verbal violence in the group. And that doesn't mean just yelling and screaming at each other, but the way that you talk with each other, and that each person has a right to their own space within the circle, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. There is that in the Maori tradition.
Uh-huh.
And they are struggling and fighting to keep that now, because now the world as it is, the younger people are going away from the tribes and the marae, and... they have done, and now there's a movement for them to go back and sort of be part of that close community. So it sort of goes in waves.
That's interesting.
There are people who have lived in community, all the families sort of. I mean, if you're a grandmother, you're still looking after your grandchildren, or you have your the families are all together, uncles, aunts, cousins. You know, I mean, they live close together, and they have the marae in a huge big building where they meet, and it's a very important place, and so the younger people over the past years have sort of, instead of staying near the community, have gone off to the cities. And
right.
And that happens. It's happened all over the world.
Everywhere.
But there's a new feeling afoot with some of the younger people now that they want to go back to their roots.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is really neat.
That's wonderful.
And there's a lot of wonderful things coming out of the Maori.
That's wonderful. This word, Marai
is
just gives me the goosebumps whenever you say it. I mean, it's really interesting. So now I want to know what it is, really.
Well, Marai is the meeting place. I'm not absolutely certain myself. My Maori culture and knowledge isn't that good. Maybe that's something I should do when I go back home, is take a course on Maori and study it more. But the Marae is the meeting place.
It is the meeting place.
And everything takes place there. Celebrations, and you have to be welcomed onto the Marae. Uh-huh. If you go to visit the Marae, you would have an incredible welcome.
Uh-huh.
And the whole haka-bit and putting down of the grass, the piece of tree fern in front of you with a huge warrior standing there.
Wow.
And you've got to bend down and pick it up. And if he doesn't like you, he could cut your head off, sort of thing. You know, I mean,
well,
that's the ceremony.
That's
the ceremony. And you pick up that green twig, whatever it is. And then, and if you smile properly, you know, that's okay. But if you, if they didn't like you and they knew you weren't honest in the old days, that's at that point that the war would start. You know, that attack.
Amazing.
And they used to do this to the people who came originally to New Zealand on their ships.
The settlers.
Yeah, they'd sort of be met on the beach by a whole crowd of warriors with all their spears and that sort of thing, and they'd throw them the olive branch, as you might say, and if you picked it up properly, you were okay. But if you didn't, or if you sort of pushed it aside, or you were in big trouble.
Wow, that's amazing. That's wonderful ceremony.
Yeah, but the Marae's are very special places,
mm-hmm.
and they have huge kitchens, and they have huge meals, and huge celebrations, and so much happens on the Marae. And the huge big room, that open part, is they have pillows and mattresses and beds, and people sort of all sit around the walls and lie, and you know, you don't normally have formal chairs unless it's a formal occasion.
Wonderful.
It really is wonderful. Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm. And I we don't want to get into too much detail, and we don't have much time left, but I think that the one question then now would be, are the Maoris open for Reiki?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
We have had one Reiki master. I think there is more. There are two that I know of now, and there could be others, Maori Reiki masters, and they have initiated hundreds of Maoris into Reiki.
Wow.
And also the Maoris are coming to other Reiki masters.
Right.
Yes, and two of our strongest people in the Reiki master group that we have each year are of Maori family, and it's just wonderful.
That's wonderful.
Oh, they love Reiki because it speaks to them. It speaks to their mana and to their energy, and they just love it.
Wonderful. That's great. Mm. Well, it's time to close, Bobby. Can you believe it? I think these interviews go way too fast. I'm just wondering if you have something that you would like to say to the listeners. Just a last word of, we won't say wisdom, but a last word about your Reiki path.
Oh, goodness. Oh, it's been an absolute joyous path. It's been hard, it's been wonderful, it's been exciting, and I'm just so grateful that it came to me, and I'm so grateful for the Yasui system and for Phyllis that I ever became a Reiki master. And if I'd never become a Reiki master, Reiki still would have filled my life.
Uh-huh.
My mastership has been something extra.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that I have been able to spread Reiki myself further than I would have otherwise.
Well, New Zealand has been very lucky in my book. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phyllis.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.